Hi, my name's Anna and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Wow. I really want to tell you the experience that I had pulling up and coming in. I really want to thank you, Fernando, for calling me and asking me to share with you. I've been around for 11 years. I've been sober for 11 years. I'll get into all that stuff later. I've been to a lot of meetings. I was involved in GSR early on. I've always had a commitment. I love the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never been to a more welcoming meeting than this one. Thank you so much. Really. I have an amazing home group myself. You're welcome to come to it anytime. It's the Hollywood Riviera meeting that meets in Redondo Beach. It's been around for like 40-something years. It's an hour-long meeting. It's a 15-minute speaker and participation. Before then, my sponsor, who I'll introduce to you tonight, sitting next to me, Ron Jay, has a barbecue at his house every Monday night for the last 25 years. Everybody is welcome. He feeds anybody that walks through the door. It meets before the meeting. Starts around 6. We walk around the corner to the meeting. It starts at 7:30. If you're ever in town in Redondo Beach on that side, please come by and join us. I hope that you'll get the same reception that I got here tonight. I don't even know. I can't even tell you how many people came up to me and thanked me for being here and shook my hand. And when I sat down, did the same thing. You know, that really is Alcoholics Anonymous. That really is the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous showing up. And how can you not feel welcome if you're new to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're one of the 8 people that identified? Sorry. Wow, man. What an awesome group to be in, to be a part of that. If you are new and you didn't identify, because that was my story, welcome. Welcome to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know Tony. I'm sorry for your loss. But this type of reception and that type of involvement, like, that's what you get, right? Somebody of that caliber, somebody that is that dedicated to the program, that's what's fed here, right? And if you allow yourself, when I came, I allowed myself to be part of something bigger than myself, right? I loved Mike. Thank you for your pitch, Mike. I allowed myself to become part of the group of drunks, right? Part of that higher power, part of that something that happens, the magic that happens in a meeting, at some point, it jumps off, right? And there's something here, like we all can feel it. God, I love that, you know? And if you are outside of that, come in. Let it take you. Right, I had a big problem with that, and I think that that's not an unfamiliar story for any of us. I had a lot of this going on, and I don't know where we're going tonight. I'm not a circuit speaker. I'm just, you know, a bozo on the bus, as my sponsor likes to tell me. Good for me to hear. I need to remember that. Some of my favorite character defects are arrogance and false pride. So I'm just going to try to keep it real up here with you. I'm not going to tell anybody else's story. I'm going to tell you my story. My story isn't that exciting, but I'm going to share with you my experience, strength, and hope. And when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was born in Long Beach. Actually, Orizaba, just super funny that I made a U-turn in that street to get here, was a street that I lived on and had a lot of really gnarly things happen. When I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous the first time, I mean, I was really little. My mom and dad met in AA. My dad was a heroin junkie from East LA whose second language was English. My mom, super white. like didn't even know how to say hola. My mom was diagnosed schizophrenic and alcoholic, and so my dad had to leave because he was sober 5 years before I came on the scene, and he couldn't stay with her because she couldn't stay sober, and so it was a big conflict for my dad. So my dad left and left me with her, and so I grew up in this really wicked way, really abusive. My mom wasn't so abusive herself. Like when she would drink, she was verbally abusive, but she had a lot of bad things happen to her in front of me, and always with somebody sicker than her, so in turn a lot of bad things happened to me. And that's also not unlike a lot of our stories. Mm-hmm. Sexually, physically, emotionally, mentally. I was told over and over again, I would show them pictures of my dad, who I just loved, and who would try to take me away when he could. And, you know, they'd show me pictures of him, my stepdad, and say, "You're not a spick. You know, we don't know who you are. We don't know who your father is." And I was a child. And to be told this over and over and over again, you know, you really start to question, like, who am I? Where, you know, like... It was very confusing for me. So the mental abuse, very real. Like that whole brainwashing cult thing, like very real for me. Which kind of lends itself to my story later when I came to the program. I like to say, and I've heard this a million times from lots of different speakers, that those reasons do not make me alcoholic. That abuse that happened to me is not why I'm standing up here in front of you today. The reason that I'm an alcoholic is listed in the big book. I really, 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 really believe in the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really believe in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous can be found in the big book. I believe that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a simple set of exercises done over and over and over and over and over again. And that set of exercises is the 12 steps. I believe that that is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as outlined in the big book. I believe that a sponsor is meant to be your guide, right? Because really, when I got here, I thought I knew something. There's an old-timer at the club in Hermosa Beach that I went to when I first got sober, and he talks about being an intellectual. And that is somebody that believes their own bullshit. For those listening to the speaker, I am pointing at myself listening to the CD. I hate that when there's a speaker CD and I'm listening to it and like everybody cracks up and I'm thinking, what are they doing? You know? I'm pointing at myself because I really believe that I had it up on you guys. Like I'm really intellectual. I know some shit. Like, I can read the book and interpret it. I don't really need somebody else to do that for me. So the whole idea of having a sponsor, very difficult for me. I survived my childhood. I talked about all that abuse. I really survived my childhood, so I felt like, you know, I've been taking care of myself for a long time. By the time I got here, I don't really need anybody else coming in here thinking that they're going to show me or tell me something about me. No. So I had a lot of this going on. That's what I meant. Like, I don't need what you think you're going to give me. I'm going to take care of me. I got this. Along with that, and it comes out, I like to call her Shaniqua. I like it. I got to, like, name these girls because they be popping up all the time trying to take over, right? You need to get to the back of the bus, lady. We don't need that today, right? I really came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous thinking that I knew some things about myself and that I had a lot of layers, a lot of armor going on, a lot of protective covering that I really identified myself as my personality. Like, that's just who I am. You don't like that? Let's take it outside. I got no problems with that, right? All of that stuff... If you're laughing, you can probably identify with some of that. And I got to tell you, if you're laughing at that stuff, if you stay here long enough, That's not where you're going. Hold on. Hold on. Right. All of that stuff is covering up what's really down there in the belly, right? All the fearful stuff, all the stuff I'm scared to tell you, all the vulnerability that I got right here, just sitting here, right, that I've had my whole life. I love Mike's thing. He drank to become a part of reality. Not my story. Still not very fond of reality. I don't want any part of it. I really did drink to escape. I really did. I am one of those people. I spent a long time fantasizing and making up stories about my life because it was so painful in the moment that I could not live there. Not for one second could I stand to be where I was because it was so painful. So by the time I found drugs and alcohol, I was so happy. It was a spiritual experience. It really took me out of that. And I had a lot of good times, and I love getting high. Whoo! I love getting high the way that Mike did. I love to get there, right? I'm not interested necessarily in the social aspect. I was a bartender for a long time, so I love to do all that. Like, I love to have a good time, but I'm interested in getting there, you know? And as the faster I can get there, the better. And if I don't remember, awesome. You know what I mean? Like, it's an adventure. What did I do last night? Like, I was never really afraid. I was never afraid of that. I can tell you some stories, some war stories. It's not exciting. My drinking career is not very exciting. My drinking and using was a lot of fun, a lot of fun. It wasn't very exciting. You know, some of the things that might identify me, I barely graduated high school. I was an honor student, and I was really busy getting loaded. By the time I left school, I was like, I got no plans to go to college. All my friends were going to college. I was like, nah, I'm cool. I'm doing this. Which was a lot of drinking and a lot of whatever else that anybody had, I was willing to try. My motto was like, I'll try anything once. If I like it, I'll do it again. So by the time I graduated, I barely graduated, and I moved out promptly because I lived with my dad. By that time, my dad was actually able to get custody of me when I was 11. And so I grew up with these spiritual principles because my dad was still sober. So I went to a lot of AA and NA meetings growing up. That's what I was saying. You know, my first time in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous were, I grew up here. So I knew that there was this program. I knew that it worked. I just didn't identify myself as a person that needed it. When I was 17, I lived in Hermosa Beach, and our house was the party house. We had a party every night, and or I'd go down to the bar and hang out really cool places like Benzone and Pier 52. I mean, the darker, the better. That's my, if it smells like booze walking in and there's no windows, that's my kind of place. I love that. And my bedroom's here, and my bathroom was like where that little hutch is back there. And I would be so drunk that I wouldn't be able to get from my bed where I'd be laying down super loaded to the bathroom to throw up, because I love to throw up too when I drink. I mean, I just do. It doesn't stop me. It's just part of the deal. And I'd be needing to get sick, but I couldn't make it to the bathroom. And I lived in this room that had a concrete floor. And so I put like a Mexican blanket on the floor to keep it kind of warm when I got up in the morning so it wasn't freezing. And I'd just roll over, and I'd pull aside the blanket, and I'd puke on the floor, and I'd clean it up in the morning because it was concrete. Like, seemed easy enough. And then at some point, I got smart, and I started putting a pan, like a bucket there, so I wouldn't have to clean up the floor. And it was like 6 months into me being sober that I heard that line, our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. And I was like, wow, I don't really think that's normal. Like that people drink, get sick, and like do that. Like it really never occurred to me that other people did not drink to that extent or do those types of things and think nothing of it. If that doesn't surprise you, welcome to the program. I'm going to say you probably earned your seat here. So I had a lot of, like, A lot of good times, a lot of scary situations. You know, I put myself in a scary situation and not think nothing of it because I was looking to get high. You know, if somebody had what I wanted, I don't even know you, I'm getting in that car for sure. I'll tell you one more story. I ended up, there's a little bar in the little Redondo Beach area that I live in, and I would drink there a lot, and my friends were going to this other party because they wanted to do the after-hours thing, and there was other things that you're not allowed to do happening, weren't allowed to do in the bar. Bathrooms, by the way, my favorite place. Love a bathroom. Lots of stuff goes down in the bathroom. Lots of stuff. I had a great time in bathrooms all over the South Bay. But my friends wanted to go to the house, actually, to do these other things. And so there was a party that was going to happen. I was like, yeah, I'll meet you there. I was driving my girlfriend's car because she wants to go with the dealer. And okay, cool. I'll take your car. I'm walking across the street to her car. I'm in the driver's side. I'm getting ready to go. And there's a knock on the passenger side window. And this huge guy leans down. He's like, you know, gives me the signal. I don't know this guy. Okay. So I go up to this guy's house, right? It's like walking distance. I go through this alley. I go up to his house, and we like doing a bunch of outside issues. I'm good because it's all gone. I'm ready to go. I got to get to a party. But now I'm loaded, and I'm a little worried about driving my friend's car. If it was my car, no problem. But I don't want to drive somebody else's car, right? So I'm that responsible. So I say, I got to go. I tell this guy, I got to go. And he's like, all right, I'll call you a cab. I'm like, okay, cool. So like 20 minutes goes by, and the conversation's kind of getting a little weird. Like personal, sexually personal. And I'm like, man, where is that cab? And he's like, oh, I called it. I'll check on it. I'm like, okay, cool. And like another 20 minutes, and now I'm like, man, there's a party happening, and I'm not at it, and like we don't have nothing else here. I got to go. And all of a sudden, this light comes on, and I'm like, I look at him, and I'm like, did you call a cab? And like, God's grace, I swear, man, because this cat was huge, and he broke down. Like, I could have been in a bad way right there. But, you know, Shaniqua's ass, like, did you call a cab? Like, there's going to be a problem if you didn't call. Like, I'm going to do something. And he was like, I'm really sorry. Like, I wanted to talk, and I wanted the company, and I didn't call a cab. I was like, you need to fucking call. Give me the phone. You know, so I call a cab. But, like, those types of situations, and I left, and I went to the party. Of course, the cab driver was way more dangerous, 100 times more dangerous. I asked the cab driver to drop me off, like, a block in front of where I was going because he was so crazy, like, aggro, and, like, I was like, I got to get out of this cab, thinking nothing of the guy where I just left. Right? Really, like, stupid situations, right, that I didn't think twice about because I was looking to get mine. So when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first time I was 18 years old, I had moved out, and, you know, I was living that life, and I thought I was going to turn out like my mom, and so I got real scared, and I went to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stayed sober for 5 years, and I was super involved. This is another thing about this meeting. I love the involvement. I looked around when you said, raise your hand if you have a commitment. Huge number of people in this meeting that have a commitment to this group. Well, I mean, and I just got to believe that that lends itself, right, to this vibe. Awesome. I was super involved in the program. I was involved in H&I. I had a sponsor. I sponsored people. I read the big book. I'm telling you, I'm an intellectual, so I think I know something at this point about the book and how to stay sober. And all of a sudden, you know, 6 and 7, they're tricky. Step 6 and 7, all right? I didn't really stay vigilant about my nature, right? Those instincts gone astray that drive me if I'm not careful. And sometimes even when I am, right, they can talk to me in AA language. and like make things that aren't okay okay. You know, like Jedi mind trick myself, you know. I wasn't vigilant, and my nature sure did come back to me, and I started acting out in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've heard it said that, you know, I got a friend, we were on a way to a meeting one time, and this line came out, and it's perfect. If you don't change your behavior in Alcoholics Anonymous, you will be changing your sobriety date. I was started doing the same things that I did getting loaded sober, started acting the same way, and it took me right out. And I was real uncomfortable. I didn't get loaded right away. I started acting out in the rooms, and then I got real uncomfortable in the rooms, and then I couldn't be here. But instead of not being able to be here because my own, because I'm able to look at my own behavior, you guys became a cult. You guys were trying to tell me how to run my life. Seriously. Like, I get people that come here and think that Alcoholics Anonymous is a cult. I understand that because of where I was. I had to make this something that was not palatable for me anymore. I had to turn this thing that I was being completely given myself to and involved with into the worst thing possible, to allow myself to act badly and go and not think twice about it, which is exactly what I did. So I left for 14 years, and when I came back to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous 11 years ago, I came on a court card. Welcome, if you're here, on a gift card. It was a gift that I didn't know I was about to receive. Seriously. Like, I understand today what people mean when they say that sobriety is a gift, right? Because there's a lot of really good people that I know, a lot of really good people that cannot stay sober. Man, I get it. I've done a lot of work since I've been here, but I believe that there's a people that have done a lot of work too that cannot stay here for whatever reason. And I'm not up here being judge and jury. It's none of my business. That's between them and their God. I know that today that my sobriety is a gift because I've been through some stuff in sobriety. There's no way I should be standing up here speaking to you guys. Really, it's an honor for me to be here in front of this group, especially because of the vibe that I feel here, but just period in Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I came back to the program, I would identify, but I would say, my name is Anna, and I really don't know. Because I didn't know, and I wasn't willing to say that I was an alcoholic. You're asking me to give my will and my life over to this something? That's no small charge. This is my life. I have survived a childhood of hell, and I'm just going to give it to you? I don't even know who you are. In fact, you guys are a bunch of drug addicts and alcoholics. Like, really? I'm feeling pretty valuable at this point, and that's not really the care I want to give myself to. So if you're asking me to identify, I need to know what this is about. So if you're here tonight and you don't know what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is about, man, this is the group to get in with and to find out what it's about. There was a lot of people that raised their hand for sponsorship here, a lot of guides, a lot of people that are of service. Find out what this thing is about. Find out about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. It's impressive. It's impressive. You know, just the dedication for Tony, like, that kind of cohesiveness, that kind of unconditional love, man, that's deep, right? So I had to get sober first. Physically, I had to get sober, right? It talks about that in the book. And then it also says that physical sobriety is just the beginning, right? Alcohol is but a symptom of what's really going on. I love the way that Mike touched on that unmanageability part, right? I like to think of that as my will. My life is unmanageable by me because my will, my will is out for me. It wants what I want, right? Not what anybody else might want, and certainly not a power greater than myself that probably knows what's best for me. Like, I'm very narrow-minded and finite with what I want, you know? I'm going to have what I want, whether it affects you or somebody I care about. It might not matter if it's that important to me. When I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was really, really angry because I had been here before. you know, all that ego stuff gets in the way. Man, if I would have just stayed here, you know, I'd have all this time, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm really fortunate, you know. The thing that took me out was, you know, probably like the most blasphemous thing you could ever do in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? That old behavior that I was talking about. You know, I really did my sponsor wrong. And I think that, you know, most of you, I had a female sponsor at the time, and she was married. And, you know, she took me in. You know, she showed me this way of life, and I did her wrong in her house with her husband. And I couldn't come back here. And when I did come back, it made it really hard to find a sponsor. You laugh about that, but that's some real shit. Because I'm not oblivious to myself. When I'm drinking and loaded, I'm oblivious. But when I come into the rooms, I have a bit of consciousness, right? And by the way, if you're here, and I said, hold on, elevate your consciousness, that's what's happening, right? You work those 12 steps, I guarantee you're going to start waking up. Thank God that we don't come in here and get awake all at once. Because when you realize the hurt and the pain that you have caused the people that love you the most, if you were aware of that and felt that the minute you walked, nobody would stay. That is way too much. That is way too much. Like, I'm trying to anesthetize that stuff, right? Thank God that I was surrounded by people that just were kind, right, and loving and invited me in. So I went to this meeting, and, you know, I would say, I don't know, and an old-timer came up to me, and he said, you know, we can't tell you if you're alcoholic or not, but if you just keep coming back, you'll figure it out. Just keep coming back. And so I did. And I did figure it out. And it is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you want to know where it's at, it's right up front. It's in the doctor's opinion. It tells you exactly what an alcoholic is. Gives you the description of that. I started looking for a sponsor about 60 days because I was really knowing that I was in trouble. Like, I couldn't stay. I was getting really uncomfortable. And I was having a really hard time. I was afraid. I was afraid to ask anybody because I felt the shame and the remorse and the guilt. And by the way, that sponsor had killed herself. Yeah, man. Bad. All bad. Right? I'm not saying that that's what happened, that was the reason. I don't know because I didn't get to make amends to her until after I came back and after she was gone. But I was getting really uncomfortable, and I was going to this meeting. There was about 10 people in this meeting. Somebody said, go over there and ask that guy right there, and he'll direct you. And they pointed at this guy right here. And so I went over to him, and I said, hey, I'm looking for a sponsor. And he goes, all right, you know, what's your story? And I tell him a little bit about it. I was in nursing school at the time. I had gotten my second DUI between first and second year of nursing school. They're not too happy about those things, about giving a license to take care of somebody else's life when you're willing to kill other people drunk driving, right? They don't really like that at all. And so I tell him that, and he's like, why don't you come to this Monday night Riviera meeting? There's a lady there. She just became a nurse. She's got a felony. Maybe you can relate. By the way, I didn't have a felony at this point, which is why my story is so much better after I got sober. So I go to this meeting. She's not there. I go the next week. She's not there. By the way, this meeting, I lived in the same apartment for, I don't know, like 10 years. This meeting was half a block. My sponsor, now his house, half a block around the corner from that meeting. So I go to this meeting. I'm like, I can't believe this meeting's right here. I go to this meeting. She's not there. I go to this meeting. She's not there. I go to this meeting, and I'm like, I'm going to lose it. And somebody says, why don't you just get down on your knees and ask God to put that person right in front of you? Okay. So Sunday night, I get on my knees. Not my habit. For the right reasons. More on that later. More to come. I go to this meeting Monday night. The next night I go to the meeting, and she's there. And so I walk up to her, and I say, hey, my name's Anna, and I'm looking for a sponsor. And she goes, this is what I suggest, that you get on your knees and ask God to put the person right in front of you. I'm like, oh my God, that's a sign. I just did that. Somebody told me to do it, and I did it, and here you are, and you're saying the same thing. Will you be my sponsor? And she reluctantly said yes. Now, this is one thing I didn't know, but again, you know, I believe that the power that's greater than all of us that unifies us here together tonight and allows me to stay sober one day at a time and wants the same for you if you're sitting in this room tonight. She really helped me heal my relationship with my mom. She reminded me so much of my mom, and I had a real problem with my mom because of the way that I grew up and that she didn't protect me and she didn't nurture me and I didn't get what I needed, man. I was broken in so many ways before I ever found drugs and alcohol. And so she really helped to heal this part of me, you know. She was also chronically depressed and, like, didn't take medication for it and, like, wouldn't show up. And, like, I just drove her nuts, man. I'm telling you, I am, like, trying to be the president of AA. I want to work a program. Let's work some steps. I'm ready to do this. I mean, I was in. Like, I'm like this until I'm in. Like, this is my saying. I'm black and white. I am either all in or I am not in at all. That is my story to the bone. Like, whatever it is. I started taking karate. I couldn't take one or two classes a week. I took it 6 days a week, twice on 2 days. Like, that is the real deal for me, man. I'm like, we start dating, we're getting married next month or I'm out. You know what I mean? Like, there is no gray area here. Okay, people? Like, I like to get loaded. Did I tell you that? Like, give me shots. Don't do the mixed thing. No. Let's get there. Like, I cannot tell you how much I see that showing in my life today. It is really difficult, right? This is the gray area is really difficult for me to behave and to learn about, especially at 47. Like, growing up in this program is super difficult, very humbling. Like, I don't know how to have effective relationships. I don't know how to have a true partnership with somebody else because it's my way or that I'm either in or I'm out. You know what I mean? We're either doing this my way or we're not doing it. It's so difficult. It's just a lot of process here. Whew. So I get this sponsor, and you know, about a year in, she fires me because she just can't take it, man. Because I'm like, let's do this, you know. She's like, she's having a hard time hanging on, you know, getting out of bed and shit. She's got me, and so the whole time I'm on my sponsor's doorstep, like talking to him because he's a half a block away, and you know how needy newcomers are. Like, I need to talk. And he's always there. He's always there to listen, right? He's always there on the front porch smoking a cigar, chilling, like, come on over, you know, let's talk, let's read, let's do whatever. So I call him up and I'm like, hey, man, I think I just got fired. And he said, all right, well, I'll be your temporary sponsor. Okay. So a couple days, I'm like, why am I making him my temporary sponsor? I mean, this guy knows everything about me. He knows all my stuff. Like, I'm just going to fly with this, right? So for the past 10 years, you know, he's been my ride or die. And, you know, you talk about meat and potatoes, right? The guy talked about meat and potatoes. This man chops wood and carries water. Shows up for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Coming up on 30 years in April. Goes to way more meetings than I do. Has his barbecue at his house works with, I just, like, this is the example that's set for me. This is what I'm locked into. I'm going to fast forward. There have been a lot of things that happened. I got married in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got divorced in Alcoholics Anonymous. 3 years ago, I'll tell you the good stuff first, right? So my sponsor, I tell him, you know, I graduate. Promptly, a month before I graduate, I get a phone call from the Torrance PD, Is this Anna? We'd like you to come down and we'd like to ask you a few questions about something. Like, a girl that I was graduating with, I was class president of my nursing class. A girl that I was graduating with was vice president. She's like, you know that they're not asking you, like, they're not asking you to come down there because they're trying to be friends with you, right? I had no clue. I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, she's like, they're going to arrest you. And I was like, shit. I went directly to the lawyer's office. I got two lawyers because they wanted to send me to prison for 3 years. The formal charge, we're back to the bathroom now. The formal charge was oral copulation of a person under the age of 18 and above the age of 15. In my defense, I thought he was 17. Turns out he was 16. You know, all I can tell you, and the thing is, people are like, oh, you were loaded. Oh, no, I was stone cold sober. Stone cold sober. These are the decisions and the choices that I make, right? This is my moral compass, for real. Like, I really did not know that there was anything wrong with that. Like, I didn't have any malice in my heart. I wasn't, like, planning to, like, marry this guy and, like, have kids and have him kill my ex or whatever those weird things are. Like, that was not my deal, man. I was in it for me. I'm in it for me. The really bad thing is that I got I got two boys. One of them is playing football with this guy in high school, right? All of a sudden, after that one event, I realized, like, man, this isn't a good idea. I'm in nursing school, and I love my sons. My boys are everything to me. They're my only family, and I am attached to these boys. And so I'm like, this isn't a good idea, man. And so I tell the kid, I'm like, hey, man, if you were older, I would definitely date you, but you're not. So, like, you know, son, thanks. And, you know, we're cool. And, like, a year later, he gets a girlfriend, and she's weird, and I don't know if he told her what, but, like, somehow the teachers get involved, and they need to report it to the police, and the police wiretap a phone call from him to me, and he's freaking out. Like, a year later, I'm like, what is going on? And then I get the phone call. We'd like you to come down and answer a few questions. So fast forward, and this is the thing. I'm right at my ninth step. I am beginning my amends process at the very beginning. They let me graduate nursing school, and I promptly go to jail for the next 4 months. Thank God I didn't have to go to prison or have to register under Megan's Law. I went to jail for 4 months. I will tell you that this man showed up at Linwood Jail every weekend and waited 3 hours to see me for 20 minutes and always had a member of my home group with me. That I got a letter every week in jail from somebody, from a member of my home group. That is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, because up until that point, I had dedicated myself to this program. I was heavily involved. I told you, when I'm in, I'm in. And I believed it. I was sold on the idea that Alcoholics Anonymous could work for me. I gave myself to this thing fully. They showed up for me. For the next 8 years after I got out of jail, the licensing board of California would not allow me to take the nursing boards for the state of California to become a registered nurse, which I had graduated with. And every year, my sponsor would say, oh, you're going to fill out that application. I was like, you know what? I'm good. I'm married. I got this other career. I'm a massage therapist. I'm like, I'm happy, sober. Life is good. He's like, your story's not done. We're going to suit up and show up because that's what we do in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Every year for 8 years. And I was like, we even went downtown. I had to, like, defend myself in front of a judge and the DA, and oh, it was just the scene, man. And still, they denied me. And then one day, I got this letter. We've rescinded our decision, and we've decided to let you sit for the nursing boards of the California State. And the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, man, people were like, you're going to be a great nurse. You're going to be a great nurse. I was like, what the fuck? These people don't even know me. How do they know I'm going to be a great nurse? They have no idea. But you believed in me. You encouraged me. You helped me believe in myself. That saying, let us love you until you can love yourself. I didn't really believe that I could pass the test. I didn't believe that I could get a job as a nurse. You guys believed it for me, way before I ever believed it for myself. I sat for the boards, and I passed. A month later, I'm sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. The night I got the news, it comes in a letter form, and I had been waiting. And I was going to a speaker meeting that night, because that's my habit, right? I got these certain meetings I go to. It's my program, right? It's a simple set of exercises I do over and over and over again. I go to this meeting and I'm so pumped, man, that I missed the 10-minute speaker. It's an hour and a half, same format. I missed the 10-minute speaker because I'm telling people, I'm calling people, everybody's so psyched for me. I go in, I sit down. This guy's message was so powerful. His name's DJ. Wrote a book, From the Maze of a Life to an Amazing Life. He's an incredible speaker. I'm listening, and 5 minutes, I'm sucked into his story. I'm just like blown away. You know, this guy had gone to prison when he was 19. He got 20 years. He didn't get sober until like, he did 16 years, 10 months and 3 days. He didn't get sober until he was 10 months from being released. You know, just this hectic story, right? I'm sitting there and I'm like, wow. 3 days later, I get a call. My 19-year-old son that's living between here and Colorado, because he's one of us, and his disease has got him, has been arrested. And he's looking at a lifetime. He's looking at life sentence. And I called my friend that was the speaker getter at that meeting, and I was like, I need to talk to that guy. I need to talk to that guy. I get his number, and the next day he calls me. And me and DJ have been like this ever since. That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. No matter what your story is, you can find out. You can find somebody here. That boy has been in prison for 3 years. He didn't get a life sentence. He got 24 years, which for me is a lifetime, right? Because I'm attached to those two. Like, they're my life. And so this week, I'm going to wrap up because I got a couple minutes. Hamilton is his name. The night that I got the news, the next day when I'm online because I'm looking at my son's mugshot and I'm reading the story about what's happened. And I get on the phone with my sponsor because I know I'm in trouble right now. I'm in trouble right now. And I stop talking because of what I'm reading, because of the severity of what had happened. And I just said, I can't talk anymore. I gotta go. And I hang up. 5 minutes later, my sponsor is at my door because I'm in trouble, right? Because that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous showing up. Every time that I've gone to Colorado to have to go sit through a 3-week trial, my sponsor and his wife came to the sentencing. They've been with me. They've walked with me. Many people in the fellowship have continued to walk this walk with me, right? I just came back from seeing my son this week, actually. And, you know, he's been sober ever since he's been there. He's working a program with somebody on the outside. The changes that I have gone through, I have never been closer to getting loaded in my 11 years than the past 2 years. And I didn't actually, you know, there's a lot of different ways to escape. Right? There's lots of different ways. The reason I'm here tonight is because I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows, you know, because drugs and alcohol have an effect on my body, you know, that it doesn't on other people. That's why I'm here. And I got this mental obsession that will not leave me alone, that just tortures me into believing that those things are going to make me feel better somehow. And I need a sufficient substitute. And in the beginning, it's the fellowship, right? And the part, because I don't know anything. I don't know how to do the steps yet. I don't have a guide. So in the beginning, it's you, right? And what you're giving me. But the deeper I get into this thing, it changes and it evolves. And hopefully that's what will happen, is that if you allow yourself to become a part of this thing, that it starts to grow in you, right? And that this relationship that I have with a power greater than myself now, that is the thing that sustains me and keeps me. The tricky thing is that it doesn't just come to me directly. Like, I don't wake up and God's like, hey. It's usually my head that's like, hey, let's have a chat. The thing that happens is that I gotta stay connected. Connection is the name of the game right here. Connection in the fellowship. God speaks to me through you. God spoke to me through you tonight when I showed up. I felt it. I felt the language of the heart. You have that here, right? I heard it. I heard it with Mike, and I heard it with the guy that made the announcement about the man that you lost. I heard it. I heard it through his eulogy. God speaks to me through you. I got to stay here. I got to stay connected. There's an opportunity for me to have physical sobriety if I just show up and do the drill. I got a friend who says, I love people that say we just do the deal. Deal implies some kind of negotiation. There's no negotiating, right? It's do the drill. Do the drill. Do the simple set of exercises over and over and over. Those cliches, get a sponsor, get a home group, get a commitment, they're cliches for a reason. They're talked about every time for a reason. That is the foundation that allows me to have some kind of physical sobriety, to start to understand what's being said here, to catch that spiritual distillation that's happening, right? To hear something deeper, to feel it. That's what I'm looking for. I want to feel it. I can intellectualize this thing right down to the next closest bar. I need a message of depth and weight, and where that hits me is right here. When you allow yourself to be cracked open and you share with me what's real, I feel it. That's what has me. That is what's kept me. I pray to God, or whatever else is out there, that if you have not felt that yet, that you will allow yourself to stay long enough and be open-minded enough to allow that to happen for you. I was going to do some other stuff. That's all I got. Thanks, you guys.